Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy and covert human intelligence source, Nathan Acock. Hello, Nathan.
I wasn't expecting that one.
No?
Is there a reference or a joke I'm missing there?
Yeah, so Chiz became a thing last night. The BBC had to literally explain what a Chiz was after Line of Duty was screened. Because they just started using it, like, literally all the time with no introduction to what it might have meant. I mean, it's kind of clear from the context of the show what it meant.
No. They really did make a mistake with that. Because
they did.
I spent the first 10 minutes going, "You what?" And then
it sounded like jizz as well.
Yeah, my wife was like, "What is it?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I think it's an informant." But it did say, "I want to know where the chiz is." It was like, "Yeah, this is this is strange."
It was really weird. It was really weird. Anyway, that's the reference, Nathan. Okay. But clearly, you think Line of Duty is far beneath you.
Propaganda, mate. I know. I think I will. I will watch it once it's comes to a close and I can watch it all within the space of 3 months instead of... I'm too impatient. I don't like to watch shows while they're still running. I mean, I will if they're really good ones, but I sort of
like it as a novelty. There aren't many shows that I watch in this format where I literally have to wait a week. It's Line of Duty and Walking Dead are the two things that I watch in that way.
And it's horrible. It doesn't work because you can't... There's no flow to it. You can't go from a quiet episode and then immediately into one that kicks off. Like, Line of Duty was a bit boring and now we've got to wait 7 days and it's just like, is it worth waiting 7 days for the next episode?
So, Bardi, are you thinking of stopping and then picking them all up when it's finished?
No, because people will spoil it all over the place.
That's the thing, isn't it? That's the thing. It's the spoilers.
Yeah.
Apparently, Jed Mercurio isn't actually that nice a bloke. I've been reading this week. He took some criticism from a journalist very badly and called them the C word. And yeah, turns out he's not.
I like
him. Sweetness and light. Mm.
Well, it's very
he's a very good writer. Although I did read someone else... this isn't going to all be about Line of Duty, by the way.
No, it could be. There's not a huge amount to talk about in terms of Tottenham. I've watched WandaVision because the members of the Discord chat were talking about WandaVision. I started watching Succession. We could just do a TV episode.
I mean, we probably should.
No. We need to talk about the win. We can't spend 8 hours talking about losing matches and then not do anything about wins. We won a game. Let's get going with this.
Look, Bardi's back up his hill and it's a beautiful day out there. It is sunny. I've had a lovely walk today. day, the sun is shining, the birds are tweeting, Bardi's Hill is looking tempting, so he's popped up there with his
green grass,
with his caviar and his his Moet, and yeah, he's happy as Larry.
I'd like to think of it as doing hill repeats. You get nice and fit by running up the hill and then relaxing down and then running back up. So I'm in the midst of hill repeats, and you know, I'm halfway back up this pretty steep hill.
Shout out to some of our listeners who've given us some reviews. Hot and Gassy left a really good one about Spurs against Lyon. Valatza left this review. So the title is So Negative. The content of the review is so difficult to listen to sometimes. We win twice in a week, and every time I listen to this podcast, I come out feeling negative about my club, and gave one star. So thank you for that, sir, for continuing to listen, despite the fact that we obviously absolutely appall you. No, honestly, stop listening is the best thing I can say.
not
because
listening.
I want people to stop listening, just because it's obviously not making you happy. I don't want anyone to listen if it's not making them happy, right?
Right. Sounds like my alt account.
Could be. Oh my God, I didn't even consider that. But maybe, Nathan, are we being negged by our podcast mates?
We really are going as far as we can to not talk about football, aren't we?
Yeah. One more little bit of admin before we do talk about the football. Nathan did a video with Harry Brooks, our friend Harry Brooks. Really enjoyable. One for the patrons, one for the ex-subs. It was about whether Jose Mourinho coaches attack. And you disagreed in a very sort of respectful way. You both, I think, both pointed out a few useful things to one another along the way. And I got a lot from it. So thank you, Nathan. It was great work. How did you find that with Harry?
Yeah, really interesting. I think it'd be very hard for a lot of people to have sort of, like, debate isn't the right word, because a debate is like a formal thing. But, you know, thought out disagreements in depth on these kind of things. Obviously, you know, the nature of Twitter is not sort of a useful tool in that regard, because you just try and shrink everything down. It was really good. It kind of didn't go quite as I was expecting, because like the premise, the concept I was setting up is that like we would answer the question, does Mourinho coach attack, and explore more of the details. And essentially right from the off, we sort of largely agreed that of course like he does coach it a bit, but not a huge amount, and he leaves a lot up to the players. And so instead of sort of going into we did a bit of that, and Harry talked about how you develop relationships between players, how you train that, and how that materializes on the pitch a little bit. But for most of it, we talked about sort of the strengths and weaknesses of that approach instead, which is still, you know, obviously a very worthwhile thing that I'm glad that we did, and is sort of the next step in that conversation. And I thought, it's fine to go out on a Thursday afternoon before a Europa League game, because it's just, you know, it's just the second leg of a Europa League game that we've already wrapped up. It won't be anyway, whatever, don't worry about that. We did that one.
It was really good. It was very good. Also, I retweeted the Nagelsmann video at the weekend. I actually rewatched it. It's pretty exciting. Aston Villa team selection. So the team selection news, I guess, that we want to focus the most on is Grealish not playing, because that was a very pleasant surprise. He is by far and away Aston Villa's best player and makes them tick. So it made me tick that he wasn't playing. But Spurs had a few surprises of their own. Not so much in hindsight, when you hear that Alderweireld and Aurier were unavailable for selection due to, I think, illness. But we played Tanganga at right back. Roden and Sanchez were the partners at the centre of the defence.
Mm-hmm.
And Vinicius came in as a sort of second forward. Although, was it a second forward, Nathan?
No, he led the line and Kane dropped deep, because of course he did. How was that? Who was expecting otherwise? Oh, they were on Sky. They did on Sky, the graphic was Vinicius as the 10, which is obviously insane. there's no point dwelling too much on that. Yeah, so it was kind of build, not just by Alistair Gold, but primarily people were getting excited about an Alistair Gold tweet that it was going to be this sort of big,
ruffle a few feathers.
Ruffling of feathers, yes, that's it. Yeah. And I'm very pleased to see Roden come back into the squad. So I've been saying that, you know, I want to see more of him. I'm quite happy seeing Tanganga playing right back, considering our other options there. The Vinicius one was an interesting one, because, like, Vinicius has played in games in which we've played badly, like Anderlecht or whatever, we played badly. And afterwards, Mourinho said, you know, some of these second choice players, they aren't trying hard enough. And then Vinicius doesn't make the cut the next time because Kane played. You think, oh, okay, clearly Vinicius is one of these players that he's not happy with. Obviously, get knocked out of the Europa League. Lloris sort of doubles down on Mourinho's point of second choice players aren't taking their chance and aren't applying themselves correctly. And then Vinicius starts, and that was definitely surprising to me. Personally, I'm happy with what I've seen from him. Just came as a bit of a surprise given the sort of the context. But yeah, I mean, you know, Kane has essentially been playing as the number 10 all season, so it makes sense.
Sure. And Bardi, how did you feel about, well, I guess Grealish missing, but also Bale being only on the bench for Spurs?
I mean, what I've been calling out for is something for us to get hold of with Mourinho, some kind of plan. Now everything's gone. I was quite looking forward to seeing what he was going to do with the team, and I think it was quite a promising start. That's I said on Twitter, that's a back four I can get behind. That is a back four which I think is one very much based on the future. It's a back four which I have a lot of hope for, and not just in hope and like that. I hope they can do something, but it's nice to have a little bit of belief. And I want to see Rodon get game time. I want to see Tanganga get game time. I don't need to keep seeing Aurier, Alderweireld, Dier. We're not learning anything from these guys. Mourinho's not learning anything. They've had their opportunities this season and they fucked it up. I think Dier's career is finished at Tottenham. I honestly think the Zagreb result has ended Tottenham's career, under Mourinho at least, anyway, for quite a few individuals. And I don't mind that. Let's just move on now and do something else. And I think there's a lot to be positive about from it, because we finally saw a midfield trio of Højbjerg, Ndombele and Lo Celso. And we saw a defensive lineup, which is a little bit shaky, but I don't think it's shaky as Sky liked to make out it was. And it improved as the game went on, which is a really positive thing.
Cool. So in terms of how we approached the game, Nathan, we had a question from Jamie T from the Discord, who said, what style of football did we play?
We had some of the ball, and sometimes we played it short. Sometimes we played it long. Sometimes we crossed it early. Sometimes we passed it about. Sometimes we attacked fast. Sometimes we attacked slow. I don't know. We played really sort of generic. I guess we played dribbling football. I think we attempted, and obviously this is going to be the case with Lucas playing and him playing quite a central, I'm going to use the word central, but I don't mean central as in the center of the pitch. I mean integral, crucial, spearheading role in the team. He's going to attempt a huge number of dribbles. Lo Celso is not too dissimilar. They're going to succeed quite a few. They're going to fail quite a few. So it was dribbling football, I guess. Dribbling football and Kane with a player in front of him is those are a die. Do you have a better way of phrasing what I'm trying to say?
Look, I think the positive spin that you would put on that is that we played with variety in our game.
But I wouldn't use that. When we played against Burnley, we did a really smart way of giving, sort of presenting Burnley's defenders with two situations they have to defend at once, right? Making them half turn and then playing it short in front of them, pretending you're going to play it short in front of them and then switching in behind. That wasn't this. This was just, we played back to basics. And if you want to take Lloris's comment about like not having the sort of the foundational and basics there, that's kind of what we did. We went out there and we were the better team. that's the football that we played.
I found us to be a bit more energetic than usual. I thought Vinicius,
sure,
I thought he put in an incredible shift. I thought it was great to have Lo Celso back and his energy and just like concentrate, like good industry. Sissoko does some good industry, but there's not really much else to it. I think it was a much more high energy than we'd seen against Zagreb and against Arsenal especially.
Yeah, I mean, so the things that stood out to me about this performance was Kane was really, really, really good. And he'd had a couple of bad games, so it was nice to see Kane play well again. And look how the result changes when Kane plays well. Also, I thought Lucas had another really solid game. And I'm going to say it again, I think this is Lucas's best ever spell for Spurs.
Sure.
I really do. I think, look, I don't think he's an outstanding player. I don't think he will ever be an outstanding player. I think he has some good attributes that you have to ride when he's in form. I think Mourinho is getting the best out of him at the moment by asking him to be a nuisance, to be a wasp, to run at the defence when they've got the ball in a kind of a crazy way, basically. He's not structured. He just does his own thing. He just charges at players and forces mistakes. And it does, he's so quick, but it does work. And that actually brought about a goal yesterday. And that's not the first time that's happened. We've seen Lucas create a goal from being a nuisance before. Not only that, but I think he's doing a really important thing. Bardi's already mentioned the energy. I think Lucas helps set the tempo. Definitely. I think he really does. With his enthusiasm, his limitless enthusiasm, he encourages others to do the same. Sure. And look, we've shat on Lucas for about 2 years, and all of us, I think, would not be that unhappy if he was sold. But let's enjoy him while he's playing well, and he's playing really well at the moment, and I'm happy for that.
I think that's fair. The other thing is that, like, he's finding the pass at the end of his dribble, which is, like, tactically the biggest thing. Like, he still has plenty of occasions where he dribbles three players and then passes a ball to the fourth or dribbles into the fourth. But he's getting off, you know, four or five times a game where he does the dribble and then he sets up Vinicius for a tap.
Yeah,
you know?
A really good cross.
And that's the difference between, you know, good Lucas and bad Lucas, basically. The tempo stuff is important, and that's why he's in the team. That's why, you know, that's why he's starting so many games when we need that. Enthusiasm is the right word. When we need that enthusiasm, and it's something that we've spoken about before. For me, I still find him a frustrating player, even when he's giving us that when we need it, and he's losing the ball and doing nothing with it. But at the moment, he's not only giving the enthusiasm, but he's also having some effectiveness. And I will not say any more bad words about him in this entire section.
Yeah, that's the thing. While it continues, absolutely, we know it won't last forever. It never does. And we should be selling him while he's, you know, his stock is slightly higher. Yes. It makes complete sense to sell him as soon as possible. But he will go down as a folk hero for top for that hat trick, and I will never forget Lucas Moura, basically. Bardi, how did you feel about the sort of opening 25 minutes where Spurs really struggled to get a grip on the game? We sort of lacked control. Villa were having most of the possession. And they were doing pretty well, Villa, until it got to the final third when they just looked toothless. But were you worried about Spurs in that period?
Yeah, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't. But, you know, they didn't have their first shot until 58 minutes. So it wasn't like they were causing problems and they were opening us up. They were chucking the ball over the top, and Davinson Sanchez was getting himself in an uncomfortable position every now and then. And Reguilón was getting caught out a little bit.
He was.
But I think they adjusted. It's the fifth different centre back pairing we've had this season. So there's going to be moments, and you could see they were talking to each other, and gradually those problems stopped happening. Of course, we scored the goal, and were able to perhaps drop back a little bit. But I don't know. I like those two at centre back. I just think they're a little bit more mobile and a little bit they just cover ground faster. And I'm just more secure. When the ball gets lobbed up into the area, I just have a bit more faith that Davidson or Rodon's going to get something on it. Rodon made a couple of excellent blocks from crosses where that was all positioning. He didn't get dragged towards a goal, which is sometimes what happens to Dyer, and he didn't get caught in no man's land. That's been happening to Alderweireld. So he did some good things there, and I think I would like to see him play now for the rest of the season. Let's give him the run now, because what we got to lose? We've got nothing to lose now. It could be that maybe the top four is already done, but let's learn something and let's build from that.
I'm definitely on the play Rodon for the rest of the season train. I'm also up for playing Tanganga at right back, even though long term I definitely think he's a centre back. I think, to be honest, Tanganga has been our best defender on numerous occasions when he's played this season. I really think he's our most naturally talented defender. But Rodon looks good, you know. I thought Rodon, like you said, looked really good with his anticipating of the ball. He looked good in possession to me as well. He's quicker than he appears. Or than you might think from his size. He's quick around. He's quick on the turn, and I think there's lots to like about Rodon. I mean, personally, I would prefer Alderweireld to be in the team than Sanchez. I just feel more secure. I think Sanchez, he makes some really naive mistakes. He made one yesterday where he kind of barges men off the ball unnecessarily, and he does that a lot. And it concerns me about him that he still hasn't kind of got to grips with muscling players off the ball in that way in the Premier League, and doing it in a way where you don't get called up. But I'm not against. I mean, if Mourinho decides that he needs to build for the future, then fine, you know, whatever.
I did think Tanganga was coming a bit too narrow in the second half. He did almost become a third centre-back, and they did have opportunities down the left, which was a little bit... I don't know whether that was tactical to bring him in, but he did get very narrow in the second half, and that's my only concern with him playing as a fullback. Perhaps occasionally he'll just get dragged towards the centre too much.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned at the top that I was really relieved that Grealish wasn't playing, and I, to be honest, I thought... I was worried about the game with Grealish in mind. In fact, I put Grealish in my fantasy team because I suspected that he would play and I suspected that he would score a few points. But when it was announced that he wasn't playing, I thought the best Villa can hope for here is a 0-0. I really did. Nathan, what did you make of Villa?
When we lost two games on the bounce recently, there was a lot of discussion about the run that we had prior to Arsenal and Zagreb was really overblown for its positives because of the weakness of the opposition we faced. And as much as, you know, that's an opportunity for me to get Mourinho's back, I feel that, like, that was overstated because, you know, there aren't really bad teams in the Premier League. There aren't terrible...
And Fulham are pretty good.
Fulham are pretty good, you know. It's not easy to take victories from Palace. It's not easy to take victories from Burnley, right? It's certainly not as easy as we made it look. So those aren't, like... just, you know, assumed results for us. And with all of that in mind, without Grealish, Villa just looks so toothless. They look like... So there was a period of time from sort of 15 minutes to 30 minutes, or maybe 10 minutes to 30 minutes in the first half. Villa had a lot of the ball. They had us pushed back. I think if Grealish is in that game, it's a very different period of time for us and potentially a very different game for us. Obviously, you know, we played the team that we come across and we did beat them, and that all that is fair. But this is an occasion where I will say yes, but the opposition, because I just think that, like, they didn't know where to go when they look like a team who've been completely dependent on one player and who are then missing their player, right? A bit like how we've been when Kane's been missing. Just no ability to sort of access the box, essentially.
Yeah, they were kind of reliant on Traore doing something special. And yep. To be fair, he did a couple of really special things. I mean, a couple of really nice bits of skill, and also that fabulous pass to Target, who inexplicably chose to try and cross the ball rather than shoot. But as soon as Traore sort of dropped out of the game, and, you know, we got on top of him just before half time, and then second half had him under control, and he, to the extent where he got substituted, as soon as that happened, I just didn't fear them. I didn't think they had anything, really. They weren't able to get the ball to Watkins effectively. Barkley came on and added nothing. McGinn, I thought, had a very underwhelming performance. And we kind of had them at arm's length in the second half. And, you know, in response to that, we actually put together some pretty good moves, I thought, in the second half. And our confidence really grew after that second goal, which we should talk about. So, Bardi, Kane has faced some criticism for this. But what did you make of the penalty decision?
He got chopped down. It was a ridiculous tackle.
I don't know.
The ball was gone, but he still made the challenge, and it's a penalty. I mean, it's more of a penalty than Lacazette, Sanchez on Lacazette. But don't do that. Just a bad decision.
So I think people are sort of trying to make out that Kane cheated. In my eyes, Kane was trying to do a Cruyff turn and missed the ball.
Yeah, totally.
So he just blundered. But then Cash just needlessly goes to ground and takes his standing leg. And look, I'm not going to sit here and say that's 100% a penalty. I think it's one of those 50-50 ones where if the referee doesn't give it... Or is that Nathan?
I'll say it's 100% a penalty. He's taking him out with his trailing leg.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not against that interpretation at all. But I think it's one where if the on-field referee doesn't give it, I don't think the VAR overrules him.
I think VAR tells him to go and have a look at the monitor.
Maybe. But... absolutely ludicrous tackle from Cash. I mean, that's the key takeaway. Do not go to ground like that against Harry Kane in the box. Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I was talking up Cash on Discord. I was
He's good. Looking up
a bunch of statistics around Cash. I was asking my friends who watch Villa. I was like, yeah, this is because I talked about him when he was in the Championship, and I was like, maybe this is a player we should. Oh, he's just. Scythes Kane down in the penalty box, never mind.
Yeah, No, I think he's a good fullback. I do think he's a good fullback. That was a very naive moment from a player who's old enough to know better. But there we go. There we go. As I said, I think that second goal gave Spurs a lot of confidence, and you could see it flowing back into the play. Some really nice moments. I kind of wanted Bale to come on at that point. I wanted Bale to sort of be in amongst it and maybe score a couple of goals while we were on top. But alas, it wasn't to be. Nathan, what did you think of Lo Celso?
Not his strongest game, you know. If you're a player with the talent of Lo Celso, and you are made to be sort of the second best winger with Lucas on the other wing, you're not doing too great. I wasn't about Lucas, but he's just returned from injury.
I wasn't happy with him either.
Yeah, you know, he's obviously going to be way off match fit. You know, let's talk about Lo Celso again in 3 weeks' time, and I think that we'll be feeling much more positive about him.
Yeah,
you know, still, he comes to the ball a lot when more than most players would, but and is probably not the best habit in a lot of setups. But I think because of the way that we play, suits us pretty well and got us moving in that way quite a bit. Carried the ball over distances in a way that was useful for us. Not really much in the final third for us in this game, but again, you know, he probably wouldn't have started this game under normal circumstances. I think it's only because Mourinho is looking for that changeover in the 11, and, you know, send the message to Bale and all that kind of stuff, that he started. I think that he would probably have been in for you know, more minutes off the bench for a little while. So yeah, 3 weeks' time we'll talk about Lo Celso again.
I still think Lo Celso, this Lo Celso not match fit is still a huge step up from Winks and Sissoko. So I'm
sure.
Happy. I'm very happy to see him play and get minutes. And as we go into a part of the season where it's one game a week, I think this is going to be great for him.
Yeah, it definitely works out nicely for Lo Celso coming back. So hopefully get some form and fitness back into the season. That'd be lovely. We have loads of questions, as ever. So this one is from Matt Smith on Discord, who says, why has Tongi dropped off, or why is he not as effective? Bardi, what do you think?
I thought he was pretty good against Villa. Yep. I thought at points perhaps he was too deep, like he was taking the ball between the centre-backs. But I thought he had a good game. It's very much becoming a kind of Dembele role where he breaks the press and moves the ball. And the worst case scenario at the moment is he wins a free kick, so he doesn't give the ball away that often, just looking at it with my eyes. So I thought he was fine.
That slaloming run where he avoided like three players was insane. He does one of those every match. Yeah. I think we're at a point with Ndombele now where we are just accepting his brilliance as normality, and we need to keep recognising it as brilliance. He's so good.
There are moments which concern me about him that him and Kane still don't seem to quite understand each other. Between the two of them, they will pass the ball to each other at the wrong time and in the wrong place. So I would like to see that understanding work a bit better, because I think if we can get that flow from midfield into Kane, especially from Ndombele to Kane, I think that could be something special. And they're not quite on the same wavelength yet.
That slaloming run, it was finished by something that we've seen a few times now, which is a funny combination of the extent to which Ndombele wants to really zip the ball into players. He you could accuse him of overhitting passes. There's also an interpretation that, like, he wants players to take the ball on the run through. But the combination of that with Vinicius' sort of generally not great first touch means that he slaloms past three players. Incredible, incredible stuff. Real, you know, the absolute elite of midfield play, followed by just pinging the ball off Vinicius very hard. This question sort of obviously must predate this game, or is sort of looking back from before this game too. And I think that he's maybe looked a little tired recently. And I think you're right about, like, sort of the level of expectation that we have around him. And he's not always, you know, if he's made you say wow 5 weeks in a row and he doesn't make you say wow on the sixth week, you go, oh, hang on, why is he dropping off? Maybe a bit of that. But I also think that just maybe we've not played that great at the last couple of games, and that's it. So I've no concerns about Tanguy, that's for sure.
I love him. I really love him. And I think so. All the data shows that he is truly an exceptional central midfielder.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, when you've got a player who has the skill set that he has, you've just got to enjoy them and don't look for the negatives in the game. Just enjoy all the positives, because this isn't going to happen very often. We're not going to have a central midfielder who can do all these things. Like, we were lucky, we were spoilt with Moussa Dembele for all those years, and it took us a long time to start to appreciate him as a fan base. Let's not do the same with Ndombele.
Doesn't score enough goals for me, Chris.
Don't. That's, I literally had that conversation with someone on Twitter the other day. Cronescast says, carrying on from your discussions in the last pod about fans in the stadium affecting the chairman's decisions, I'm a season ticket holder and, like most people, hate Jose as our manager, but I currently feel very helpless and hopeless on that matter about the situation at Spurs. As fans, and especially whilst the stadiums are empty, is there any more that we can do to affect change at the club? Going to watch Spurs is such a massive part of my life, I would not want to give it up with a boycott of my season ticket renewal. Bardi, any thoughts on how fans can sort of feel like they're making some sort of action?
Don't ask him, he'll say suck it up and appreciate Mourinho's genius.
Yeah, exactly.
So Bardi, imagine if you didn't. Imagine if you were really fed up with Mourinho. You're a season ticket holder. What would you do?
Sometimes you have to realise that me as an individual, I can't do anything, because my season ticket, if I don't go, if I get rid of it, someone's just going to take it. So unless you actually mobilise and do something more than just create a hashtag on Twitter like Enoch out, there's not much else you can do. And unfortunately, Tottenham have got so big now that those people who are Enoch out, those people that are Jose out, you're not doing anything. The club is not going to change its mind or change its policy based on a few individuals being upset on social media. So unless there's an actual mobilisation of fans and they do something, a protest or a walkout or have some kind of power move, there's nothing you could do. Just know that it's a phase, and clubs go through phases. And if this phase doesn't particularly work for you, then just be patient and we'll be through into another phase, which you'll like for a little bit, and then it'll become shit again. Because unfortunately, that's what watching football is like, especially for a club like Tottenham, that we're not going to win trophies all the time. But when we have good moments, enjoy it. When we have bad moments, it's temporary. Yeah, there's not much else you can do.
I think also Daniel Levy... As much as people have major complaints about Daniel Levy, and I think a lot of them are legitimate, he's not an idiot. He's not going to want a disaffected, disenfranchised fan base. He's not going to want a manager who fails to get the club into the Champions League if that happens. I think he'll do what needs to be done, if it needs to be done. Cronescast also says that he'd love to hear more about us three on a personal level in terms of our backgrounds. So look out for something I'm going to try and put together for the X-Ups on that Cronescast. Gumnut, who is an absolute legend, posts our podcast to Coy's Reddit everywhere. In fact, why am I calling him a legend for that? He ruins my life on a weekly basis when I'm doing that, because Reddit hate us. No, Gumnut is a legend. Gumnut says, is it hard to stay motivated doing this podcast and all the other extra inch bits during all of this? And I think by all of this, what he meant was the last couple of weeks, the Arsenal match, the Dinamo Zagreb match, the periods where Spurs were losing. Nathan, how do you find the motivation to continue doing your videos, for example?
Yeah, I mean, recently it has been slightly challenging. When I'm thinking, I don't really like even just like watching games. Sometimes my dad will be like, "Oh, I'm not too worried about. I've got this other thing on during the game. I'm not too worried about missing it." I don't know if you're watching. I'm saying, "Well, I sort of have to watch it because it's kind of my job." So that occurs. I've done, and like before this podcast, and even during this podcast, I've sort of said this is probably going to be a slightly short one because there isn't that much to say about the game. And I think that again with my dad, if he asked me a question about Spurs, I might just sort of be like, "Oh, well, you know, if I was down the pub, which obviously I'm not, but if I was down the pub and someone says, oh, you know, did you see that Spurs game? I'd probably be like, well, yeah, you know, because there isn't that much to say. But I think that the dynamic that the three of us have, I say at the start, I don't know if I have that much to say, but we just have this ability to sort of draw conversation out of each other. So I might feel a little apprehensive before a video or before a podcast thinking, do I really want to do this or do I really have that much to say? But we get going and it's very easy. So there's always something to say.
That's the thing. I mean, I think Spurs are great source material. And I think in a strange way, the ups and downs of this season have made it I said last week that it's been my least favourite season as a Spurs fan. That is absolutely true. But in terms of creating content, it's easy when you've got constant talking points. It's And that's why, that's what my motivation is. It's to find the talking points and to find out why Barty's not unhappy, you know? Because it's, I mean, like, when you think of it, it is a bit odd that we are at complete opposite ends of the spectrum, despite the amount of time we spend talking to one another about football. That's fascinating, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, How about you, Barty?
I've spent the last, I don't know, 30 years of my life thinking nothing about nothing apart from Tottenham. So what's weird, what I do find difficult is talking about Tottenham outside of here. Mm. And that's, yeah, and that's where it gets a bit strange. When back in those days when I used to work in an office and someone would go, "Hey, Tottenham, eh?" And I'd be like, I don't want to talk to Tottenham. I don't want to talk about Tottenham with you. But then I'm quite happy to come on here and talk about Tottenham all evening. They're a wonderful beast. And there's always this scene in the Simpsons that always reminds me of Tottenham, is when all those viruses are trying to kill Mr. Burns, and because they're all trying to kill him at the same time, he's alive. And that's me with Tottenham. I hate Tottenham so much, but all my hate can't get through the door, so I just love Tottenham. And I love Tottenham so much, but I equally hate them. And that's why I can't stop talking about them. I can't stop thinking about them. And they dictate so much of my life is because they are such a part of me, those bastards.
Scout 1081, who is M. Uden, says, question: for next season, would you prefer some squad changes, add another season with a diluted hope of top four, or add some promising kids and accept a mid-table finish with meaningful minutes for our young players? Any thoughts?
This is clearly bait to get us tweeted about. Because the trap here is that Scout 1081 knows well and good that we would happily take lesser results for more promising football with younger, exciting players, knowing that they're not Vardy, obviously, just to get people to tell us that we hate to win and we're natural losers, etc., etc.
I didn't see this question that way, I must admit. Vardy, go on.
There doesn't have to be that one or the other.
That's we true. Can,
that was my answer. Why not both?
Why not both? And, you know, why not both? And perhaps we're going to see that from now to the end of the season. That would be nice. It doesn't have to be one or other. It doesn't have to be, let's fire Mourinho. I mean, I still think Mourinho probably goes at the end of the season. But if he goes and he leaves with top four in the League Cup, then he walks away happy and he leaves us happy. That's the best thing, no? And I'm sure you two would agree with that. You would like us to finish top four and the League Cup. Mourinho walks away. I did the impossible, and then something else moves on. I'm happy, you're happy, we're all happy. So this is what upsets me about people who want Spurs to tank so Jose can go. Jose might still go anyway, because Levy might just be fed up with it and he might make that change. But we can have good things and still change. It doesn't have to be awful for a change to be pushed.
Yeah, and I do think we need some squad changes. In fact, I had this discussion with Ali Jameson on Twitter the other day around how many changes we need. And Ali was saying he thinks we need 10 players to leave the club. And I was like, go on then, list them. Let's see a list of 10. And I couldn't disagree with many of them. I genuinely, I looked at that list and was like, God, yeah, he's mainly right. I mean, Bergwijn was on there. I would keep Bergwijn. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I was saying 7, 8, 9 players to leave would be about right for me this summer. And the thing is, I don't think we need to bring in that many players to replace them, because, you know, we've got Sessegnon, we've got Skip, we've potentially got Parrott.
Yeah.
Perhaps we've got some more youngsters to come through. Replace these players like Rose and even Winks, Sissoko, if they have to go, some of our centre-backs, replace them with players that are already in the squad. We don't need a huge squad like we've had this season. And then just sign like 2 or 3 key players, a right-back, maybe 2 right-backs, a centre-back.
Maybe 2 centre-backs.
Maybe 2 centre-backs, maybe a goalkeeper, who knows. But you know what I mean? It's like, I don't think the surgery is that extensive.
No.
And I think suddenly we're easily top four again. This all depends on whether we keep Kane, of course, because if Kane goes, then the top four's gone. Top four's done if Kane goes, certainly for a few years. But keep Kane, keep Ndombele, keep Son, and that's... You don't need a lot more to be a top four club, I think. I think that's more than achievable, even with a few youngsters in the team, like Roden, like Tanganga, like whoever, like Skip. It's completely possible. Kunal Shah, who's one of our ex-subs, says, on the post-North London derby pod, Barty suggested that we can't expect Bale to track back and help with defensive duties. But Bale's once a defender, and he's perfectly capable of defending. Yes, he might have since developed as a player, and asking him to track back might not be getting the most out of him, but our primary objective isn't to get the most out of him, it's to do what is needed to win football matches. I wanted to ask this one, Barty, because... because Bale was out of the team this time around, do you think that was partly as a result of the onslaught down that side against Arsenal?
No, I just don't think he had a very good game, and I don't think he was very good when he came on against Zagreb. There was a moment in Zagreb where the ball dropped to him on his left foot on the edge of the area, and he just seemed to revert back to pensive Bale. He should have just swung at it, but he didn't, and it was almost like he purposely refused to pull the trigger. And I don't want to say, I don't want to accuse him of sabotage, but it just didn't seem right. And yes, Bale started life as a left back, as a left wing back, and he was fine at that at Championship level, but I just don't think he's got the physical capability or even the mental drive to turn around and chase back. It's not something he's done for many, many years. And I don't think now with his declining physical state, he's going to start doing it.
That's the thing, isn't it? It's the legs. It's yep. Like, I'm sure he's got the defensive now still within him somewhere. I'm sure he knows where to be if he's asked to do that. But can he then get up the other end in a few seconds? I highly doubt it. Nathan, is it just a case of balancing the team appropriately in a response to that?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, you've already said it in the, like, the fact that he's a former fullback, like the reason he was sort of even Championship good at fullback is because of the endless stamina he used to possess, and what was once a strength, you know, way above average, is now a weakness, way below average. And so it's not really fair to, like, call him lazy. It's him knowing that he only has so much to give and him prioritizing attacking over defending. Maybe there's problems with that if you're playing in a Jose Mourinho side against, you know, top six or top six opposition. But that's what you're going to get. I don't think that's necessary. I mean, that's going to cause you some problems sometimes. And it's something you have to think about. And maybe Bale is, you know, it has to be in this squad or any other squad, sort of a bit of a flat track bully. And you bring him out to be, you know, your third difference maker against Aston Villa or Burnley. But maybe you can't play him against really good sides or even good sides.
Yeah, I think Nathan touched on something there as well, but I'd like to even expand on that. I don't think Bale play not just a Mourinho side, but I don't think he plays in a Guardiola side or a Klopp side. I don't even think he plays in a Nagelsmann side. I just don't think he's got that engine or that drive to do those kind of things. You'd have to do what kind of Juve are doing unsuccessfully now with Ronaldo, is you just try to carry this individual and hope that he has the brilliance to lead you through games. And I just don't think Bale has that against the top teams to be able to win us those matches anymore. And I agree with Nathan 100% that he should be used for the Villa, the Burnleys, the Palace games, where you need someone just to pull something out of the bag.
Lovely stuff. And before we end, I just want to drip in another little bit of positivity. If you've not seen it yet, log on to Twitter and do a search for Thomas Bloxham, Bloxham, who is one of our under-16s who scored an absolutely glorious goal this past weekend. Bloxham is one of an array of very impressive players we've got coming into our academy, hopefully, next season. I assume he's signed a pre-scholarship deal. I hope he has, because he's very good. So there's a lot to look forward to in this group. We have lots of players who've already been in the England under-16 squad or training camps. Some of the names are very exciting. Alfie Dorrington, Gunter, Donnelly, Brian Waugh, Pysold. There are some future Spurs players amongst this lot. I'm absolutely sure of it. And we've got a very impressive first-year academy group who will be going to their second year, the likes of Scarlett, Devine, Hackett, Volton. There's some very good, very, very good players in and around our academy at the moment, and we should be hugely excited about what happens with them in the next couple of years. So if Spurs are driving you mad, do a little bit of focus on the academy for a while and think what the future's got in store.
Job done.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud, D. Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.